And welcome back to Fully Equipped, Golf.com's gear-focused podcast, where we take weekly PGA Tour news, break it down to golfers of all skill levels. I'm Tim Breon, Senior Vice President of True Spec Golf, joined by Jonathan Wall, Managing Editor for Equipment for Golf.com, and Andrew Tursky, Senior Editor for Equipment for Golf.com as well. Gentlemen, we're back in studio.
It's good to be back.
Yeah, this is nice to be back home. So how's everything going, Jay Wall?
You all are back in studio. I'm still confined to my house. And judging by some of the news I got today, I don't think I'm going to be leaving my house anytime soon. It doesn't sound like we're going to be having any gear news from Tour, which is kind of unfortunate, but they're cutting down on the number of credentials, at least initially. It makes sense with everything, you know, trying to be safe, but it is a little bit unfortunate because I know Tursky and I are both itching to get back out on the road.
Well, you know, that just means more rounds of golf there, Jay Wall. Get any in the last week?
Leave me alone. I'm not going to talk about it. I jokingly say that, but you know, Tim and I went through a fitting. Yeah, I wouldn't say we went super in depth, but we did hit a bunch of product when I was in town, and
it was a while back. It was a while back.
Yeah, it was. I think we were back shooting videos for Club Test, and you know, we went through it. I used my gamers, hit them. Just, you know, from a dispersion standpoint, I mean, it was good, but not great. And we landed on a new shaft, and it was an Obon shaft, and then the Mizuno, the JPX forged. And I told Tim, you know, I just, it looks a little bit too thick for me, you know, really good iron
aesthetics.
And so I started to get in the itch, and I asked them to just send me three irons, and, went out and tidy little 73 with three irons in the bag, not just three irons, but I didn't even have a full set of them yet. And, it was decent. Let's just put it that way. So I'm pretty happy with the results. And I guess I might have to finally eat my hat, which is something I've never really wanted to do.
So to add some context for our listeners here, Jay Wall reached out and was, was interested in getting some new gear in the bag. Definitely wanted at least, at minimum, he'd been gaming some Strixon irons and wanted to get the right shafts in there, the Obon CT shafts that we identified in the fall. And I said, okay, I get it. You don't want to switch the club heads, but why? And
we went back and forth.
He said the blade length is a little too long. The top line's a little thicker than what I'm used to. I just, you know, just aesthetically, it just, you know, it's not something I'm used to. I really want to stick to this. And I said, all right, well, this just undermines the whole purpose of everything we did. So I just slow played.
They got to look good.
I'll be honest with you. Slow played you there on purpose. I could have easily pushed that order for those Strixons through with those Obon shafts, but I just gave you some time to think about it. And lo and behold, a couple days later, he says, all right, I cave in, do the 6-8 in the wedge. Was it 6-8 wedge? I think it was 6-8
wedge. 6-8 wedge.
Just do the 6-8 wedge. I'll give them, put them through their paces. I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. Well, there you go, 73, three clubs.
I mean, that's what we're constantly preaching, you know, get the right clubs in your arsenal. It shouldn't be just based around aesthetic, I want to play and feel, blades and aesthetics. So.
Aesthetic and feel is important,
right? But
here's
the deal. I'm a golfer, you know, and golfers at the end of the day, you know,
are completely illogical.
You want something that looks good. We are. I mean, that's the thing. We're illogical, and that's what I'm going to is. Even for me, somebody who sees everything, it's still really difficult to get away from kind of my preconceived notions when it comes to gear. I played the same steel shafts for longer than I could remember.
Yep.
And Tim and I worked on that, and it just came out that going lighter, something I never would have thought of, actually was a huge benefit. Now, granted, those Obon shafts are really good, but there were some things that I did just simply by working with Tim that just goes to show the benefits of working with a fitter. It gets you out of that box that you're in and allows you to think about some things that you never would have even considered before.
Yep. Well, I'm glad to see that it made golf a little more fun. Hopefully, a few less balls in the woods, and
always a good thing.
We'll have to tune back in to see how the rest of the set ends up working out when we get the bag filled out. But with that, you know, wanted to talk about the episode this week. You know, last couple of weeks we've had a couple of made for TV events regarding, you know, related to PGA Tour players. Last week, obviously the match, and I just kind of wanted to spend some time on that in this episode. I think it was such a cool event for golf. You know, I was a little skeptical on the first few holes. You know, transparently, I was actually on an airplane for the back nine, so I didn't get to actually watch the back nine until later on, much later that night. But man, that back nine was entertaining. One of the best, one of the most entertaining back nines of televised golf I've seen in a long time. And, you know, there's a lot to unpack here, both on the equipment front, as far as the format, the overall look and feel of the event. You know, does this, is this a precursor to what televised golf will look like going forward in the future? But, you know, I think that's going to be a great topic of conversation for this pod. And then, as we've discussed, now that we're starting to get more into the restart of the PGA Tour season in the next few weeks, it'll allow us to get back to our regular format and regular cadence. But what did you guys think of the match? I loved it. So
yeah, I was a little nervous for the start of it just because it was raining. You didn't really know if they were going to play or not.
And it was pouring. So I was in Florida, only a few miles from Medalist when it happened, and I couldn't believe they were playing golf. It was sideways down there.
And then it took like 35 minutes to get through the first hole, so it was like, uh-oh, like, is this going to work? But as it went on, it was just, it was obvious how entertaining it was for everyone. They got so many things right. Yeah. And just like kind of that dichotomy of Tiger and Phil playing such high-level golf and then Brady kind of washing it everywhere. And but I don't know, it was just so entertaining. And like you were saying, this could be a precursor to more of these type of events going forward. Right. You know, there's so many athletes that play golf that we would tune in for. I mean, they got it so right this time. That's
exactly right. Tom Brady with the most memorable shot of the entire day.
Ever.
Easily.
Ever.
Right?
The most unlikely golf shot to ever be hit.
Unbelievable,
he
right?
was all over the course, and then right as Chuck is talking all that noise, right in his face.
I would love to see a composite of all of his shot tracers that day. it would be quite entertaining. It would be great to get a shot of like a composite of all of his shot tracers from the day. You know, I saw
military golf, left, right.
I saw balls curving left. I saw balls curving right. I saw a ball do a 90-degree turn to the right at some point. And then obviously he dunks one and then tears his rain pants.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you can't make this stuff up. The dialogue between JT and Barkley was priceless.
JT killed it. What a natural.
He was awesome. You know, he will become the Tony Romo of the golf commentating world when his playing days are done. That's for sure.
Yep.
I kind of like that take.
He was awesome. You know, the dialogue. Here's a question. I really, really enjoyed, I believe it was the second or third hole where Mickelson was off in a collection area and hitting a chip shot. And JT just barged right in and said, "All right, Phil, tell me what you got
here."
Yeah,
talk us through it.
I really loved that. Do you ever see that happening on the PGA Tour when they're actually playing for
never
counts?
Never.
I mean, I'd like to see how it works, but I don't know if, like, you know, Phil's keeping score 18 holes of stroke play. I don't know if he's as willing to really talk like that.
So Barkley
brought
this
up. There has to be some sort of middle ground.
Maybe early in the week. If you could maybe get him on like a Thursday when got, you know, and maybe somebody who's cruising along, maybe you get an opportunity to do something like that. But come crunch time on the weekend, you know, if you ask a guy what's he doing on this shot, he's going to tell you to go pound sand.
Yep.
So
yeah, they don't even want to tell you what club they're hitting, like 7 or 8 iron on a par three, you know.
I think this was kind of the perfect storm in a good way, because, you know, we've constantly been asking about ways to improve the quality of the golf product on television.
Right.
And everybody's been clamoring for mics, and you know, this worked because you had a charity event with four great athletes, all four guys. You know, Tiger can sometimes be, you know, a little hot or cold, but all guys that can turn it on and make it enjoyable. And that's why it works, is because there wasn't really anything on the line except money for charity.
Right.
If you're talking about a regular tour event, you're going to have a tough time getting guys to talk freely. You know, the conversations that you want to hear between player and caddy walk into the next shot, or you know, going over the shot. You can get that with a boom mic, but
the
but
Tiger chip in getting 16 at Augusta, that chip, that famous chip in off the slope.
Yeah.
Vern Lundquist. Hey Tiger, what do we got here? Tell us what we tell us what we're looking at.
I don't think he's giving it up like that at the Masters.
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of my thing is I just don't, you know, there's some secret sauce there. I just don't think some guys would be willing to do it. You know, some would say I don't want to do it because it's, you know, we got to wear a mic and it's too clunky and it might constrict my swing.
Right.
There are plenty of reasons why I could say it's never going to happen, but maybe, I mean, golf, I think found a really nice formula for a way to make the coverage entertaining and bring in the casual fan. And that's kind of what they're trying to do is get away from the diehards. They're always going to have those guys watching the coverage.
Yep.
I think they benefited two ways. One, there were no fans.
Yep.
So they weren't like, you know, when there's all those fans, you kind of have your guard up a little bit more. They were really just out there playing golf. So that was kind of cool. You know, you kind of just get the insight of...
It was really interesting to see the demeanor, specifically in Phil, kind of change as they got to 12, 13, 14. And there was a lot of back and forth, a lot of dialogue. And, you know, there was a lot of play into the camera. And then when they got to 14 and you know, after they had made that eagle on 11,
mm-hmm.
you could see that they're the competitive level... You know, the
that momentum switched heavy right there. Once
exactly
once
right.
Brady made that big putt, but everything flipped.
And the ante was upped, right? You could just see the look on Phil's face, the way that he approached things. It was a lot more serious minded. Obviously they were, you know, racing to get it in before, you know, darkness, but there were so many cool things. Barkley brought up a great point that social media, he just had a hot take here, I think it was yesterday. If you're not gonna have fans out on the golf course and you're not going to have on-course commentators, mic the players.
Right.
Give them all mics. Give the caddies all mics. Let the fans kind of see into that dialogue. Obviously, you're going to have to tape delay. You're going to have to probably censor some stuff here and there. I always look back to a conversation, a dialogue with Phil Mickelson. I think it was the PGA Championship he won at Balti. But he was in the rough. Looking at laying up, Bones is like, here's an 8-iron, Phil, lay it up to 100, we'll get it on the green, make a birdie. And Phil's like, no, give me the 4-wood, I want to hit it up in the grandstands, and I'll get relief out of the grandstands and chip it up. And I'll always remember the two of them had a fight on camera, and it ended up with Phil Mickelson saying, just give me the damn 4-wood. And Bones ends up, you know, tail between the legs, ends up walking away, giving him the 4-wood reluctantly. Sure enough, Mickelson hits it in the stands, takes a drop, ends up winning the event. But I always look back at that dialogue as like, man, that was television gold. And being able to see into the minds of in the interaction between player and caddy, it's always so cool. And I think it would be really cool from an equipment perspective because you start to realize what they're talking about from a gear perspective in the round and, you know, what they're trying to do with shots and how the gear has to match up with that. So really awesome event.
Yeah. You definitely could. I think boom mics are just an easy way to do it.
Right.
Maybe you just have more of them out there, but there are some great interactions from over the years. You mentioned one, Tim. I think of another one, but being 2017 Masters, Spieth and Greller on 13 from the Pine Straw, and he asks, you know, kind of a similar shot to what Phil had the year that he won, or one of the years that he won, and he asks Greller, what would Arnie do?
Yeah, it was pretty awesome.
And it was a cool moment. Kind of one of those, like, you know, it gives you chills, but you can get those with a boom mic. Again, I think there are ways you can do it. I just don't know if guys would be willing to be mic'd up.
I think you got a couple of pairs out there that are, you know, I think you got the Spieth Greller connection. You got to mic them up. You got to mic up Bubba and Teddy. I mean, that's,
yeah.
You got to just leave
that's
the mic
the gold
on them
comes
the whole,
from.
Just leave the mic on Bubba and Teddy for 4 hours straight, and you're going to get some hot takes.
You know who I would want mic'd up?
Hmm.
Kevin Na, Kenny Harms.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah.
Kenny and Kevin. I mean, you could make a television show of just them being mic'd up for golf rounds.
For sure.
I mean, those two just talk nonstop. I would love to see those two mic'd up for a golf
Some
round.
Of those player and caddy interactions are so hysterical. You know, in my time in the industry, I came across a gentleman named Lynn Strickland. His nickname out on tour was the Growler because he talked like this. And he caddied for Crenshaw for years, caddied for Payne Stewart in a backup situation when Crenshaw was on the mend. And, you know, Payne didn't have a regular guy on the bag. And It's like, hey, you know, this seems to be working out. I don't know how long Ben's going to be on the men, but if you want to stay on the bag, you know, I don't have a regular guy. I got a question for you. How come you only give me numbers in fives and zeros? It's either 155 or 160. And Lynn looks at him, because you're not that good. So you just, you get so many of these amazing stories that come out of these caddy and player interactions that are just, they're gold. As far as the match, equipment, a couple of cool things on the equipment side. We had Phil that was talking about the Tiger Slayer putter. We had Tiger with an MP14 four iron in the bag. What else did you guys notice on the gear front coming out of the match?
I don't think Tiger actually had the Mizuno in the bag, right, during the match. There was a photo floating around during the practice round. I think he was considering playing that for the one club challenge, and then he
pulled it.
And he didn't, I don't think.
I posted it on social last week, and Tursky's right. Getty Images snapped a photo of Tiger's bag, and they just happened to snap it from an angle where it's, you can see Frank in the shot, couple of the TaylorMade Milled Grind 2 wedges, and then just dead center of the frame is a Mizuno MP14 four iron. And I saw it, and I'm like, oh man, what's going on? And I think a lot of other people were thinking the same thing, because, you know, one, the fifth hole during the match was supposed to be the one club challenge, and a lot of people were wondering if that was the club he was going to use. And two, MP14, you know, Tiger has a lot of history with that iron, because he used a split set back when blended, split, however you want to call it, sets of irons were not really in vogue on tour. He used MP29 and MP14. Tiger was looking for a set with minimal offset, and he found that by blending these two sets of Mizuno irons, he could get minimal offset. Now, the interesting thing about the set that Tiger had for the Masters versus the four iron he had in the bag is he actually had MP29 at the top of the bag. So the four iron for his win was an MP29. The four iron in his bag at Medalist was an MP14 four iron. So it's the reverse, which was a little bit interesting. Wonder, you know, of course, me being a gear nerd, just like you guys, I wonder what his thought process is for putting that one in over the MP29. Maybe he doesn't have it anymore. I don't know. I would assume he probably does. Yeah. But anyway, yeah, never made it in the bag. I saw some photos from the match, and Tiger actually, there's a photo of him crouching down with the iron in his hand. He was pretty coy with Amanda Baliones when she asked him what club he had. And he just literally kind of showed her the iron. And she said, oh, it's a four iron. He didn't say anything about it. And I kind of wondered, oh, is this the Mizuno?
Yeah.
And then I saw photos, and I kind of matched them up like a true gear nerd should. And based on the number of grooves and the design profile, all that, it's definitely a TaylorMade P7TW, which is his iron of choice. So ended up being kind of a non-story, but still really cool to see him with some old Mizuno in the bag.
I think that speaks just to his preferences, you know. And I know that was something that the folks at Nike fought, is that he has very old school preferences. And so when you're designing golf clubs to make the average golfer better, those are not traditional designs in most cases. So you end up at this disconnect between the most iconic golfer in the industry that has preferences towards really old school equipment, old school loft, old school bounce, sole configuration. And quite frankly, his golf clubs do not work well at all for a mid handicap. They have too much loft. They're not forgiving enough. The CG placement on them is not where that needs to be for, you know, an average golfer. So, you know, it's kind of interesting to see that he always falls back into some of those gear preferences. And then, you know, Phil bringing out the putter. So, Phil, if you weren't a Phil Mickelson fan before this weekend, I hope you at least appreciate him a little bit more now. I've always loved Phil because he takes such a different approach. He's not afraid to do really crazy things. You know, the equation. What was it? It was C squared equals B plus HS equals IV. Like, that whole social post was outrageous, and that's the only thing you can explain his social media by.
You got to tell everybody what it means.
So C squared is coffee, and in Phil's words, not just like your Dunkin' Donuts pour sugar in a coffee, but coffee for well-being, whatever that means. So coffee for well-being plus calves.
Coffee fasts. Yeah.
So you got calves equals bombs and hellacious seeds. And listen, when it comes to bombs and hellacious seas, Tiger definitely, in my book, was heads and shoulders above everybody off the tee on Sunday. You know, his driving, his game off the tee was amazing.
He, like, didn't miss a fairway. You never see that from Tiger.
But and he hit a couple of cute stingers, as Phil said.
Yeah.
And but you know, when you look at some of the shots that Phil hit, you know, that drive on 11, like, what? Are you serious? I mean, he almost canned it from, you know, however.
Unbelievable. I thought he was just like chirping. He was like, oh, I think I hit it a little long. No, I thought he was kidding and that it was going to come up, you know, like 30 yards short. And he was it lands like almost in the hole.
Almost in the hole.
Jeez.
And then you look at that. So one of the things that I always remark about Phil is that, you know, with a lot of folks that like to work the ball, you'll see them working the ball a lot with irons. But, you know, for a lot of players on drivers, they may not necessarily try to work it and try to flight at different trajectories. And they may try to hit cuts and fades, but they're trying to flight it through similar windows. It's rare that you see guys really trying to flight drivers and do these really unique things as far as trajectory and shape profiles from shot to shot to shot. And in that little social media post of bombs and hellacious seeds, you know, he hits that bomb on 11, and then two holes later, he hits this hellacious seed, like probably, I'd say, 70 feet off the ground, just this low chaser. And it was an amazing shot, this low, you know, piercing cut. You look at the way he shapes the ball, both draws and fades all over the golf course. And I think that plays into what we've seen with Phil regarding his equipment preferences, playing two drivers at an event. He's looking for maximum versatility as far as workability, even off the tee ball. And that's why he's resorted to having two drivers at points in his career. Granted, not very often, but he demands to be able to shape the ball off the tee probably more than most. I would probably put he, Tiger, Bubba in very rare camp as far as, you know, looking for maximum workability off the tee. But that was one of my takeaways, is just how, you know, Tiger's driving was amazing, but watching Phil kind of manipulate ball flight and trajectory is so much fun. And seeing those guys at that skill level, I mean, holy cow, they're so good.
I was a little confused about the Tiger Slayer putter, because that's a putter that he, like, has in and out of the bag all the time, right? He didn't just bring it back from 2012.
Right.
Right?
There was some inaccurate information. They made it seem like, as they were coming on the broadcast, that Phil was, you know, bringing this putter out of the vault just to face Tiger. It's an Odyssey White Hot XG, older model blade that Phil's used. He used it to beat Tiger like a drum during the 2012 AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. And, you know, they said, you know, Phil, you got this putter. And he's like, yeah. Well, he's used that putter on and off. Typically, it's that putter that he's using, or he has the one that he used to win the 2013 Open Championship, the Versa number 9. And depending on green speed and kind of what he's looking for, he typically rotates between those two. You know, we've seen him use a couple other putters over the last few years, but those are usually the ones that are, you know, stuck in the rotation. So
yeah, I think the last time he teed it up in a PGA Tour event, he had that putter in play. So it's not like he just brought it out for the match.
Yeah.
That would have been a cool story, but not actually what happened.
I want to bring up a cool moment since we're talking about Phil that we haven't discussed. The approach shot from Phil on 5 when he asked Tiger to mark the ball.
Oh, the gold medals.
And Tiger said, "Do you want me to mark it with one of my US Open medals?" And it was like the most perfect zinger. But the craziest thing was Tiger said, "If you hit my ball, I'll give you the hole." And Phil almost did it.
Yeah.
from the
he
jump.
He missed by an inch.
Like seriously, they showed a replay, and it was not more than like a foot off of Tiger's ball. And he's doing it from the junk. It wasn't like he was in the middle of fairway. And I just think that just goes to show you, one, Phil is like the ultimate showman nowadays. I mean, he's willing to try and pull off anything, but the fact that he almost did it, and even after that Tiger zinger, you knew that had to hurt. Oof. The way that Tiger just kind of gave it to him like that.
It's
and
the only
Tiger's
blemish
good
on
at those,
his,
I will say.
Only blemish on his resume.
Yeah, it's the only like real go-to that Tiger
only
has.
Blemish,
he could
know?
Say I have more, but you know, once you bring up the U.S. Open, the conversation ends.
It's
there.
Over.
Yeah.
It's not just the fact that he doesn't have one; it's the number of runner-ups. It's so ridiculous how many times Phil has finished second in that thing.
Yeah,
and when
there's no exchange rate.
Oh,
yeah, there's no exchange rate for runner-up finishes at the U.S. Open for a one winner's medal.
So that gets me into, what was your favorite trash talk line of the event? I mean, there was a lot of trash talk going on out there. I mean, even the commentators were getting at it when JT got on Charles about his weight.
I liked when Brady came back at Chuck after he was talking all that noise.
And he's
like,
now.
Yeah. He's like, suck on that one, Chuck.
Yeah. How about you, J-Wall? Which was the moment where you were like, I can't believe that just happened?
I mean, I already gave mine up. Phil's over there. And Tiger says, you want me to mark it with one of my U.S. Open medals? I thought that
brutal.
Was so perfect. You know, it takes a special guy to be able to just dish it right on the spot. You know, Tiger didn't even give it a second thought. He just already had it like locked and loaded, almost like he's just kind of kept that one in the vault anytime Phil says something. So I'm sure that's not the first time he's said that to Phil, but man, it was so perfect.
Phil does a lot of talking. And to someone like Tiger who has that ace in the back pocket, you'd think he'd be like a little more careful or calculated how he talks to Tiger, but he just lets it fly all over the place. It's entertaining.
I've heard a couple stories from friends, you know, that have been out there for a while that, you know, Phil will be in the locker room chirping and then Tiger will walk in and the entire demeanor changes.
Yeah.
And Phil gets a little more quiet.
He turns the volume down. Most
vocal. So right.
It's smart.
It's like that Nike, awesome. The Nike commercial. Do you remember the old one where Tiger was coming back? I can't remember what year that was. And it was like Trevor Immelman, Justin Leonard, Anthony Kim, Stuart Sink, Carl Pedersen. I mean, it was like a really eclectic group of Nike staffers in this commercial, and they're all just laughing and joking, and it's showing them like all winning tournaments and majors. And next thing you know, Tiger walks
in the locker room
and says,
in this, like,
"Hey guys,
funeral.
Yeah,
yep." And they're like, "Hey, welcome back, Tiger." And I can't remember who it is, but somebody just kind of goes, "Like, oh man, Tiger's back." It's probably kind of the same situation
same
for
situation.
Like when Phil, he's like. Well, there we go. My fun's over.
Because anyone else in that group, if it wasn't Tiger, he's the alpha. And he 100%. Could say whatever he wants.
Sure. For yeah. sure.
So, coming out of this weekend, does any of this impact televised golf going forward?
I hope
and
so.
Should it?
I hope it does. I mean, I hope we get more access behind the scenes. And, like, you know, there's players who aren't superstars who might be because they were mic'd up, who are like really interesting conversation wise, bring a lot to the table, are really smart. So I think it could like help a lot of people.
Everybody
and for,
that thinks that Ben Crane is boring.
And for
mic
us.
Him up.
Right. Yeah. Guys like that who you wouldn't know, you'd think they're kind of vanilla and boring. You put mics on them and all of a sudden,
they come alive.
You know, they're really interesting and you yeah. learn something from them. And from an entertainment aspect, I mean, that was one of the best golf events we've seen, yeah. really.
Golf carts. The guys all in golf carts. Will we ever see a PGA Tour event where they're in golf carts?
I'm out. No.
I don't think no so chance. Either.
I don't think
I'd
it really takes
it.
I don't think it really takes away anything.
I'd love to see it. I love the cart cam. I enjoyed the cart cam. Just
it was a little awkward for like a couple times where like they weren't saying anything. You're just watching them drive. It's
right.
like, all right, this a little intrusive.
And there were a couple of memes I saw on social media where folks were like, I could watch Tiger just drive around in a golf cart all day and be happy.
Just Tiger cam. That's the only thing they show on the channel.
But
it just goes to show you how starved they are for live sports.
Yeah, 100%.
If they're willing to just watch Tiger drive around in a golf cart.
Did you guys see where Tom Brady spun the wardrobe malfunction into a plug for Under Armour? That was pretty amazing.
No, I didn't see that.
I didn't see that.
On social, he said, had a little wardrobe problem out there. Next time, I'll make sure I'm wearing my Under Armour rain pants instead. Lesson learned.
Nice. Spin zone.
Gosh. Yeah. But, you know, as far as the gear, my hot take of the gear from this last weekend, those damn Frank Tiger shoes.
Fire. Absolute fire.
I'm sure you saw them, J-Wall. They were pretty hot.
And they were red and black
instead of
orange and black
yeah,
with the Tiger stripes.
Super cool.
Yeah. I don't know if they're ever going to come out with any. That's my thing. You know, we always see
not,
some really
though?
Cool stuff.
The internet's going crazy
I know.
For them.
And, you know, typically whenever the internet starts going crazy for something, you got to bring it out. But it's just like, it almost looks so good. I could see Nike just kind of being like, we'll just maybe bring it out in like a limited batch. But you know how those things go. Anytime they drop limited stuff, it's usually gone in a matter of seconds.
All right. So shot of the match.
Obviously, Tom Brady.
So
like
Brady's
done. Shot of the century.
Yeah, especially
the most unlikely shot ever hold.
Especially considering the way it had gone for the previous six
exactly.
holes. I mean,
he
was
getting
so sideways.
Clowned on. Like athletes from all sorts of sports who may or may not are
who was it?
Complaining
was it,
golf.
Was it Brooks?
They're chirping him.
Brooks was like, "If he makes a par, I got
$100,000 for a par." Then he drains one.
Yeah, that was amazing. And then Brooks was like, "All right, if he makes another one, I'll do another $100K."
That was great that Brooks actually called in and they talked about it after, yeah. like on the phone. That was so cool. The way they did that whole match was awesome.
How about you, J-Wall?
I mean, it's impossible not to say Brady. I mean that, and the fact that he did it with Chuck. I mean, Chuck was just roasting him, and I mean it was perfect. You couldn't have scripted a better moment, especially for the way that Brady was playing. So yeah, it's shot of the tournament by far. Everything about it was great. The one thing that I will say that was really unfortunate that I had higher hopes for, and I know a lot of it just had to do with where the tournament ended. It ended in the dark.
Yeah.
But I really wanted to see Barkley live playing 18. They all of a sudden go to him playing it and it's tape recorded. And it was like, what the heck? I was really wanting to see him try and make bogey in the dark. And so, I mean, that was a little bit unfortunate. It felt like the only kind of low point where everything else lived up to the hype, but that's kind of my only, and it's a minor quibble, but it didn't live up to it for me.
I want to see JT go left-handed against Charles.
JT's lefty move isn't bad.
I want to see JT. So there you go out there. If anybody's listening, I want Justin Thomas against Charles Barkley, and JT will go left-handed. I mean, actually, you know what? Let's make him play a persimmon too.
What would be your okay? So we've done a match between Tiger and Phil. The match two was Tiger and Phil and two, you know, superstar quarterbacks.
Yep.
If you could create the match three, what would it look like?
For me personally, it would be Michael Jordan and Tiger Woods.
Yep.
Against Phil Mickelson. You know, I still think that having Phil and from an entertainment value, obviously his credentials over the last 20 years in the game of golf. And then as far as another sports icon, it's tough, you know, sticking within basketball. Nobody's
does
at
Isaiah,
that
does Isaiah Thomas
Jordan.
Play golf?
Oh my God.
Geez. There we go. that's going to get a little,
I bet one of his enemies plays golf. Maybe it's like Clyde Drexler, or Isaiah. Larry Bird would be pretty good.
Bird would be a good one.
Steph Curry would obviously be great. But
I think
Steph
after
is
the
like
last
almost
dance,
too good of a player.
Pippen might want a piece of Jordan now.
Pippen definitely plays golf too.
There's a little too much.
I heard he was really hurt.
Or Horace Grant. Horace Grant would be another one.
There you go. Or to get, you know, any one of these guys that he played with that roasted him, you know, as far as ex-teammates that maybe had some challenges with Michael throughout the career as came out on The Last Dance. But
Byron Russell.
I think Jordan has to be on the next one if he's game. I mean, you want to talk about raising money for charity and getting eyeballs.
Yeah.
You put Tiger and Jordan in a group against Phil Mickelson and anybody else. And
you think Jordan would
watch.
Do it?
No.
No, not a chance.
Yep. Yeah. No shot.
Now, if you said to him, if you,
it's
if
fun
you,
to talk about though.
If you said to him that okay, this it's going to be $20 million per man, and it's not going to charity, but the winner takes all. Now
he's listening.
Now Mike's probably listening,
right?
So. Well, I mean, but his old agent David Falk told the story about how Jordan turned down $100 million to go up at an event. It just goes to show you, like $20 million.
Everything.
MJ's turning it down. It would have to be really worth his time. And that's why I think if you could get somebody from his playing days who he maybe didn't like,
MJ would definitely
want to get back at him.
They showed from a TV ratings perspective that it really works. And you know, you start selling it sponsorship wise and you make it a thing, Jordan might get involved. You know, if they bring out the Brinks truck for him.
I mean, with how competitive he is, there's got to be something that you can lure him to the table. So I think that would be my.
It can't be money. It's got to be something that really gets his juices going. So you're gonna have to throw somebody in there that he doesn't like. It's the only way I think you can make it happen. got to be somebody that he can beat and yeah, that's
talk some
only
trash
way.
About
right.
So, you know, with that, I think, you know, match. Any other takeaways from the match that we haven't kind of gone into this week?
I just loved it, man. Like, they got it so right. The last couple matches, yeah. The TV matches, you know, not yeah, a little bit stale. For whatever reason, this worked just way better. Maybe our expectations were low, or they just got it all right. They checked all the boxes for.
I think
for
the us. Celebrity part was a big part, because as we found out from the first match, what if Phil and Tiger aren't 100% on their A games?
Yeah.
Then
and we learned that four pros mic'd up are
actually yeah, it's kind fun.
Of kind of boring.
Oh yeah, yeah. As far as just the professional yeah, golfers, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And then but the other part of this too is I think having the amateur golf element. You know, when you look at Peyton, he played better than I think a lot of people thought he would play.
Yep.
I think Brady probably played a lot worse with a couple of spots of salvation in there. But I think that that having the celebrities in the group carries the story a little bit, especially hedging against the fact that maybe the pros don't play perfectly. So I think that's a big part of a big element of this that why it was better than it's ever been.
Yeah. Fans are curious about, like, what they would shoot at a certain course. Like, 100%. Imagine if this match was at an Augusta where people are so curious to know what an 8 handicap would shoot. You know what I mean?
That's one thing we haven't really gone
into. Or even a Shinnecock or an Oakmont. Like,
what'd you guys think of Medalist?
I thought it was more made for TV than Seminole was.
Okay.
I thought it looked cooler visually off the tee. There was more going on. Obviously, a very difficult track.
Yeah. Super flat. I mean, that track is super, super flat. There's hardly any topography or elevation change. But the shot values are incredibly difficult, especially when you have any sort of wind. And, you know, the production crew, I can't believe the job the production crew did under those elements.
Amazing.
You know, anybody that was in that Jupiter Hope Sound area on Sunday, I mean, it was apocalyptic at times with how bad that weather was.
It was raining really hard there.
Yeah.
And they had a couple shots where you could see the cameramen. You just look at them. It's like, wow, this guy must be miserable right now.
But what do you think of Medalist? How do you think it showed, J-Wall?
Yeah, I mean it was your typical, you know, Florida golf course. It shows well on television, but I mean, for that match, it kind of felt like the reverse of the first one. I was more looking forward to seeing Seminole when Ricky and Rory and the guys played. This one was all about the players.
Right.
You know, venue didn't really matter as much. The one I guess takeaway for me was looking at it just merely from a gear perspective, not a whole lot of changes from either one of those guys. You know, Tiger, I wrote a story here this week. I actually found out that he sent his putter, the famed Scotty Cameron Newport 2 GSS, to Cameron for a little bit of a loft and a lie check. But he also had the red cherry bomb in the back cavity that had been removed. Tiger jammed that lead tape in there when he went to remove it. It pulled the red paint off, and he had been playing without it, but had that paint added back in. But other than that, there weren't a lot of gear changes, and it makes me wonder, you know, again, this is a very small sample size looking at two elite players, but are we going to see guys mostly stand pat with their gear when they return at Colonial, or are we going to see the exact opposite? Are we going to see a lot of changes? So, going to have to wait and see, but yeah, I was kind of curious to see more so Phil than Tiger if they were going to make any changes, and didn't see anything.
I can say, you know, obviously this may not be accurate and may not be the best barometer for the players as a whole, but I can just say that with a couple of the players that we work with, there are some pretty radical changes going in the bag with some players, from players replacing almost their entire set into different product. To really prominent players playing lengths and specs that you are not used to seeing them play. Guys that have been, you know, religious towards specific shaft products for many, many years have now had the time, you know, 8 weeks to test all these different shaft options and take ownership of them on the course. Now, all this is said with a little bit of caution, because the minute that they're playing for millions, some of this changes a little bit. So you may see a lot of changes week one and week two. And you may see a lot of folks go back to what they had been playing after they've tested it on the course in an event and realize maybe it's not as good as it was when they were back home testing it, you know, without any pressure.
Also depends on how they're treating, like, the whole quarantine thing. Some guys, I'm sure, just put their clubs away and haven't really done anything, where other guys are in there all the time and they are doing a bunch of club testing. So could be one way or the other.
I had a lot of feedback from players over the last couple weeks. that were talking about their deals, and guys that are either on the last year or next to last year of their deal are reaching out, you know, saying, listen, our agents are forecasting that the equipment deals just aren't going to be there. We've spoken about this many times on the pod, that the dynamics, the business dynamics of these endorsement deals for equipment, the landscape is changing, and I think this pandemic has expedited that evolution. And had numerous players say, hey, you know, I'm really not standing, and these are folks that have wins, they have cred, they have status, folks that you would expect them to be receiving fairly lucrative endorsement deals. Maybe they're not what they used to be, but they're still, you know, more than I make in a year in many cases. So bottom line here is they're not receiving these offers. And they're starting to realize, you know, if I'm not going to receive this offer, why don't I just play whatever I want to and make my money off the course? So I had a lot of those conversations in the last 6 weeks. And there's kind of some information we've been sitting on for a few weeks that unfortunately we still can't share with the golf industry that we're very excited about at TruSpec. But, you know, the business dynamics of the way tour players are, you know, on these sponsorship and endorsement deals, it's going to change radically. And like I said, I do think we're going to see some players with some wholesale changes through the bag. Who knows if they stick or not. But this opportunity, these 8 weeks for a lot of the guys that are into gear, has given them an opportunity they haven't had for years to actually do some testing on their own and not have to make these changes in 2 weeks because they have to go play an event. It gave them a chance to give it an honest shot, you know, in their home testing environment. So, and that should about do it with all of the different topics to discuss from the match. Always great fun to see these guys play in a more familiar environment to all of us than in the, you know, hyper competitive world of tour golf. And we have a cool giveaway this week to announce to all of our listeners. Tursky, what do we got to give these folks out there?
Well, it's been hard to hide this the whole time, not bring it out earlier. But we got something fun for you guys. You know, we love our listeners. We want to make you guys happy, do cool stuff for you. So we have an Epic Flash driver that we're giving away. Head on over to @FullyEquippedGolf on Instagram, @FullyEquippedGolf on Instagram, and we'll give you instructions over there. I'm peeling off the head cover right now so you can see.
Brand new,
nice and fresh.
Loft.
Shiny gloss finish. It's a Mitsubishi Tensei AV Series Blue 65X.
Nice.
10.5 degree loft, sub-zero.
Nice.
Beautiful club head. Thank you guys for being listeners. So head on over to our Instagram, and we'll see you next week. Thanks for tuning in.